all these awkward stories. By the way, they're funny and they're relatable. And we share them generously, but for the most part, people aren't taught to do that. They're right. taught to hide it. But that's not only what makes us unique and memorable, it's what helps audiences connect with us.
Welcome back to the Own Your Awkward podcast. I'm your host, Andy Vargo. And every episode, we get into what has made our guests vulnerable and how they've learned how to own their awkward in order to live their best life. Stay tuned so you can hear every awkward moment in today's show. Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the Own Your Awkward podcast. I am super, super excited to have my amazing new friend, Valerie Gordon, here today. Valerie, how are you? Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Andy. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, you know, Valerie, we met at NLV just a few months. It seems like so long ago. It feels like we've gone back forever. I feel like we have that energy where we meet and it's like, when did we become friends?
I know you.
Right? Yeah, we're old friends.
Exactly. I felt that when I met you too, Andy, and I know, so I came into this conference fairly new. I knew one or two people, but everyone there, and it's a small, close group, spoke so highly of you and your sense of humor and your authenticity. And I'm like, who is this person? I want to know them. And then our first conversation, it did have that nice familiarity to it where, I feel like we've known each other for a while, even though we had just met. And I think that absolutely comes from a space of just being who you are. And that's enough.
Well, thank you. That's a huge compliment. And it's interesting to hear. I'm blushing now. So for the listeners who aren't watching, I'm all pale from the lights, but I'm starting to turn red. Thank you so much. It's interesting to hear when people are talking about you in a positive light. Like, it's a good thing, but it is. Yeah.
It's awkward.
It is. And I try to own it, but I'm more of a do as I say, not as I do person sometimes.
I can be that way too. I think it's difficult. We sometimes get in our own heads, like, is that true? Should I believe it? Is there an ulterior motive? I've never thought of myself that way. And then of course we have that motor running in our brain that doesn't quiet down, which I know is something we're going to talk about today.
Is definitely. And I'm going to mention something about that in a bit, because one of the things when we were leaving, Valerie handed me a copy of her book and said, I want you to have this. And it is the first book. And if you're listening, she's holding it up right now. It's called Fire Your Narrator. It is the first book that I have read cover to cover in a long time without stopping. I sat down at the airport and I thought, well, I'll get some of this started on the plane. And before I knew it, the pilot was saying, okay, it's time to put your, seat backs up. And I'm like, oh, dang. And that was right when I was getting to the last chapter. So it was perfect.
Well, it is a short book, but yes, I have heard it's a good plane read. A few people I know have said they've read it on a plane, maybe because I give it out at conferences, but here now I'm blushing. So I'm like, oh, but it's just a short little book, as if I have to over explain. This isn't some tome, Shakespearean tome that you need a transatlantic flight for.
But it's packed with all the right information. I think sometimes we put this idea of value on weight and thickness of a book. And there's a lot more value sometimes in having it concise and clear and actually getting to the point with, here's something practical you can take and read and come back and refer to in order to remember, like, wait, what were the 10 narrators and which were my four?
Exactly. Well, I wanted to keep it light and fun and relatable.
I love it. So I have gotten a lot out of it. It was one of those things that landed in my lap at just the right time. So it was perfect.
And I feel like you landed in my lap, not literally because you weren't in my lap, but we landed in the same room at the right time.
Perfect. Well, I know we're having this awesome love fest, Valerie. It's just amazing. I like to start out by asking all my listeners, there's so much we see going on in the world today. And I'm always curious, what's the most positive thing you see from where you sit?
The most positive thing I see, we're in spring right now. And so with the nicer weather here, I'm from the Northeast, it definitely lifts my mood. And so I'm getting out for more walks. And I find that when I walk, I come up with my most creative ideas. So sometimes it's difficult for me. The ideas start whirring in my brain and I can't get back fast enough to actually put them down in a laptop and have them make any sense. But I do find a little bit of levity around that. So getting out and walking and similarly, and this is going to sound silly, I am not an organizational consultant. Like I'm not a minimalist. I'm not like a home organizational consultant, but there's something about spring that makes me want to clear out the dead leaves in the garage and the dusty whatever I'm holding on to, that sort of spring cleaning that we all like to do. And I take that somewhat metaphorically as well, where what do we need to sort of spring clean from our lives, not just possessions and what we own, but things maybe that we're holding on to that no longer serve us. And so I guess this time of year always makes me optimistic that as you watch, depending on what part of the country you're from, as you watch things start to bloom, I kind of think of that internally. How can we bloom, get rid of the dead leaves and kind of see what buds from that? So I guess that's what I'm optimistic about right now.
I absolutely love that. And I am a big proponent of when you want to make a change and have something happen, what you're doing in your head correlates with what is around you physically. So, you know, it's that idea of, you know, move the snack cupboard if you want to eat healthier, or clear out your house and to clear out your mind. It really does correlate. I absolutely love that answer, because it's not just the cleaning out of stuff, but also the growth that comes. It's like you're making way for the new things to come up.
Exactly. That making space and also reassessing what's still important to me and what can I let go of.
That is beautiful. I love that. Well, we are going to get to talk about your awkward, Valerie. So now this is going to be a fun podcast, because Valerie warned me she's going to throw some back at me. She has a background in journalism. So now I'm nervous about being on the hot seat. But Valerie, you first, what's your awkward thing that you've had to own in order to live your best life?
So my first thought, Andy, was this. You mean I have just one? I'm supposed to just pick one? Because it was almost like I had this list in my head of all my awkward things. And well, what should I go with? So I think that might be the first awkward thing, is owning your awkwardness and even acknowledging perhaps how many there are. But for the purposes of our conversation today, to me, it all sort of falls under this general umbrella of the stories we tell ourselves. So my awkwardness, it's interesting. It's both my strength and my challenge. I have a knack for storytelling. I spent 20 years putting stories on TV. I really understand how to tell a powerful story for impact and influence. In fact, I talked about these walks I go on. Sometimes I can almost develop the story in my head, and I have this sixth sense about stories. I joke with people that I'm sort of like that kid in the movie, The Sixth Sense, you know, the Bruce Willis movie. He sees dead people and they don't know they're dead. And I'm just like that kid, except I don't see dead people, but I do see and hear stories. And people don't know they have them. So oftentimes I can be working with a client or coaching someone how to better tell their story. And I'll have that moment where, like, I get goosebumps on my arms, where I know, like, that's the story, whether it's they finally figured out how to tell a past story, or whether it's they're just on the inkling of what their future story might hold. It's almost like I can feel it and sense it and see it. And so that is my strength. But here's how it's also my awkward. Like many people, I get trapped in my own stories, the stories that are collected in my head. So we talked about clearing out maybe old or bad stories. And it's one of the reasons I wrote my book, Fire Your Narrator, because to me, I call that sort of that inner voice that's telling you stories. I call that your narrator. And I have a very strong ruminating narrator, which is one of the 10 narrative types that are mentioned in my book. You mentioned that you had several you identified with. So I have a very strong striving and ruminating narrator. Striving in that I'm always looking to be better. Nothing's ever good enough, which in a way can be good and also bad. And strong in the ruminating sense, which can be bad, because most often when we ruminate, we remember negative things. So my awkward thing is I tend to have stories or memories from years ago, last week, 5 years ago, 15 years ago, that are mental clutter in my head that I have a hard time letting go of. Mm. And they can sometimes guide my actions in ways that are helpful, like, oh, we don't want that to happen again. But in other ways, they get in the way of seeing possibility, because I can be stuck in that sort of ruminating sense of, well, the last time I did this, this is what happened. And so, you know, it can hold me back from things. So I bring that up as only one example of my awkward. There's probably another one I'll refer to today, but because I think your listeners might have similar situations where there are thoughts or stories or beliefs that they are holding on to that no longer serve them, that awkwardly get in the way of personal growth and professional success.
Right. That's so beautiful to think about how you can see other people's stories and help them bring them out, but then also kind of get tripped up where you're like, okay, well, but how do I do that to myself? Because I know I've done that. I ruminating is one of the narrators that I resonated with, where I like, how many times do I have these things that I have to go on that walk, or I have to say, yesterday I was actually laying in bed having a lazy morning, and I was thinking, how often am I just like held captive to my brain, like to what's thinking? Like I can't even get up because like there's so many thoughts that I'm trying to work through. And it feels lazy because physically I'm not doing anything. And I finally got out. I was like, I have to go for a walk. I have to get out of here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We can get trapped sort of in our own minds, and those beliefs or those thoughts become beliefs, and those beliefs become stories. And stories, of course, are very powerful things. And you have to really consciously rewrite them. But you know, the other thing, and I don't know if you allow your guests to give more than one awkward.
You can share as many.
The other thing that really comes to mind that I want to bring up, and I promise this, I won't spend the whole time talking about all my awkwardness. But I tend to struggle with foot and mouth disease. Do you struggle with foot and mouth disease? For anyone unfamiliar, this is when you have a great idea or thought on your brain, and so you say it out loud, only to realize that what you've actually done is picked up your foot and stuck it in your mouth, that it wasn't the right thing to say, maybe not the right thought or not the right audience. And I have really, really tried to work on this because it has held me back in areas of business, in the corporate world, in certain relationships. But I will admit, I still struggle with it. It's just me. I just sometimes get so excited to say something without maybe fully thinking through the repercussions. So is that something you can relate to also, Andy?
Definitely. I get myself in trouble a lot with my mouth, and it's usually, sometimes it's me volunteering too soon or having an idea. And even though I've been in and out of the corporate world for years, I forget that if you're the one that has the idea, the next sentence is great, go make it happen. And I still don't shut up about, you know, oh, this would be great, we should do this. And it's like, cool. And I'm like, no. I'm the idea.
Go for it. Yeah. Report back to us in a week with how that went. I think that is so relatable. I know so many people who have an idea, and before they know it, they've raised their hand to volunteer for something. Mm-hmm. So it's like awkward volunteering. So they're in the meeting and they're like, what if we tried this? And then before they know it, it's on their to-do list.
Yeah. And I actually had a project that I am finishing today that I should have finished 3 days ago. And I'm like, you know, need to get it off my plate. And I had that thought of, I need to have a freeze on anything new until I get caught up, kind of like a hiring freeze. It was like a hiring freeze for my brain of, no, you don't add anything in, no new workflow until these three or four things are done, and this, especially this one. But I can't tell you how often I have to do that because I have ended up saying yes too much. But
yeah, but it also sounds like you are following your creative impulses, and you just need that go-to person who's like, that's a great idea, Andy. I'll get started on that right now. Yeah, exactly. So that you don't then have to see it through.
I can't wait to have a staff for that reason. First thing I'm going to hire is someone who's very high in executing.
That go-to person.
So I'm curious, have you had times where you've had that foot and mouth where you said it and you thought, oh gosh, there it is, but then maybe it turned out to be a good thing that you shared it?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, I tend to be a bit of an oversharer. And I'm trying to think if there's a specific example I could bring up, but I know sometimes when I meet people for the first time, I just like to be real. I just like to be real. So, you know, when you're at a networking event or a professional event and everyone's trying to sort of like put their best self out there and, oh, I've done this and I grew my business X percent. And I'm like, I haven't balanced my checkbook in 5 years, you know, something just, and I think they think I'm being intentionally witty and I'm just trying to be real because I like people who are real. And it doesn't mean that we should always, you know, lead with our faults or our failures. But I do think that type of person is much more relatable. In fact, one of the storytelling exercises that I do when I train corporate clients is the difference between telling a success story, very important to embrace your successes and know how to speak of them, and telling a failure story. By the way, most failure stories, besides being incredibly humanizing and relatable, in the long run, wind up being success stories. They're actually better vehicles. So what I might find awkward is sort of like, gee, maybe I shared too much too soon, or maybe that wasn't the right audience, or I'm being too self-deprecating. I also feel like that's kind of me. And the people that I attract are also kind of like me, and they're willing to do that. I wrote a blog post once about be real, don't be a robot. Because every so often in my corporate world, I would meet someone who just, every word they said was so polished and perfected, not just in a business sense. You know, in a meeting, we're looking to, you know, leverage the cross-functionality of marketing sustainability, but even in personal life. So I would say, gosh, you know, I'm a working mom with two young kids and I'm just really struggling this morning. I left my coffee cup on the roof of my car and I drove down the driveway. And then, you know, I would meet, most people can relate to that and they too will share a story. But then you meet that one person who's like, oh, well, I always balance my work and personal lives. And, you know, my husband is an equal partner and, you know, everything works perfectly in our lives. And I always sort of feel like, ooh, maybe I showed too much of myself. But then I also feel like you and I are just not meant to be friends kind of thing. I'd much rather keep it real, which is why I love the name of your company, the name of your podcast. I think if we could all just be who we are and own that awkwardness, we'd find in many ways that that is a relatable superpower.
Yeah. And that's kind of my thing when I got started was that it's not like you're setting your awkward aside and becoming successful or living a good life because, you know, in spite of it, like, oh, I got this thing, but I can still make it happen. No, it's because I lean into that thing, because I put my foot in my mouth, because I'm relatable. Now I'm connecting with people that are on my same wavelength and that I can actually connect deeper with and find out that, you know what, if I'm connecting with people who are powerful, even though they talk about their failures, or that they're powerful, even though they spill their coffee in the morning and have a stain on their shirt or whatever, you know, it's
right.
I have
and it's very real. It's very humanizing. And I think it helps people to see us better, that other leaders are just like them. And, you know, we have our messy moments. So owning that, I think, is really important. And also leaning into that awkwardness with curiosity. So my ability to stick my foot in my mouth comes from, and our friend, mutual friend, Sarah Elkins helped me realize this when she did strength finders with me, understanding my strengths. I'm very strong on the activator and futuristic characteristics. Those are two of my top five. So I'm so eager to get the story in motion and jump into the next thing that I jump in literally sometimes without fully maybe thinking through, is this the right time? Is this the right audience? And I have learned, you know, that's a blind spot and I can take a pause, but I've also leaned into it with a lot of curiosity. So in the last few years, I've become very interested in the neuroscience of storytelling, like why stories really work and what's actually happening in your brain as you're hearing or telling a story. And I became very curious about why I would score very low on empathy. Like I took an assessment and empathy was not, I did not, you know, it was not high in EI or emotional intelligence. And I thought emotional intelligence, like I'm very empathetic. Why would I not score high in this? And I realized that it's not just about empathy. And I'm speaking of emotional intelligence at large, that there's other components to it. And one of the components is impulse control.
Oh.
And I realized that's, I can be the nicest person in the world and have empathy for every human out there. But the reason I scored low on these emotional intelligence assessments was because I have poor impulse control, which goes right along with the foot and mouth disease, that I have an impulse to say or do something. And I just, you know, I kind of dive right in.
There
and
it is.
There it is. To be able to embrace that with a sense of curiosity, like, I wonder why I do that. And I wonder what the impact has been or might continue to be if that's not, you know, I wonder how I can get better at it. And so I love the idea of owning your awkwardness, not necessarily trying to solve for it or stop it, but to just understand it better.
Mm-hmm. That was a learning thing for me with the StrengthsFinder. Excuse me. When I went through that, I also have futuristic in my top five, which was exciting. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can see the future. Like, wow. But one of the things that was a big lesson when I went through them with Sarah was that it's not just about, okay, these are my talents, these are my strengths, so that's where I'm going to be good. It was, how do I make sure I don't let them trip me up? And how do I make sure that I go, okay, well, like she, like Maximizer was one that's in, it's high on mine. I think it might be six. I don't think it's number in the top five, but it's high up there.
Yeah.
And Sarah was explaining how, you know, you always want to make things better, and you have to remember that it's still good. Like it's good now. Like, be aware of how good things are before you try to make them better. And also, don't break your friend's heart sometimes by saying, like, hey Val, this is a great book. Have you thought about doing this? You know, have you considered this? Because my instinct is to be like, to be the problem, not even the problem solver, but just like that maximize, like, how can we make this as amazing as it can be? Because I'm excited about the good book you wrote. It's not because I think it's a crappy book and needs help. It's because I think it's so good. And maybe I see this idea that thinks, oh, this could like push it over the top or get it, you know, on the bestseller list or whatever it is. And that can be taken really wrong. And I didn't even think about how that could, like, how many souls I could be crushing in those conversations.
Right. And you have the best of intentions. Well, the futuristic makes sense to me because you already said you have these great creative impulses, and then you wind up like taking more on your plate just because you have, oh, we can do this. And then all of a sudden it's on your list to execute. And the maximizer is really interesting too. And that was my first thought is, I do that well as well. Like, let me solve this problem you didn't even know you had, and you probably don't even want to deal with because I see a better way to do it. And I've had to learn for myself after, you know, 20 years of putting stories on television and producing these stories, not every event is mine to produce. And sometimes other people can figure their own stuff out. Like, I don't have to go in and fix it for everybody else, but that impulse is still there. And so one of the things that I've done recently, and I stumble over this too, again, the foot in the mouth thing, when someone says, hey, tell me what you think of this. And my immediate, like, so it's someone's podcast or someone's book or someone's outfit, you know, whatever. And I immediately go to, well, how do we make it better? You know, or right. what is the person not aware of, or, you know, looking for things to critique. And of course, a lot of the times that's not what someone wants to hear. Now, it would be a lot easier if that person said, tell me what's working about this, or tell me what you like about this as a guiding question. But I have learned, rather than jumping in with my foot and sticking it in my mouth, I now say, what kind of feedback would be most helpful to you? Or what kind of feedback are you looking for? Because my instinct, like yours, is, well, you could do this or this or this. And then you can feel them just shutting down because that's not what they wanted.
Yeah.
So trying to use better questions to get at, what does this person need from me so that I can respond in a way that is most helpful to them that might not be my natural instinct.
I love that. You know what I really appreciate about what you just pointed out is that a lot of times people ask us for something, but they don't really know how to put it in the words to tell us what they really want back, because they might be wanting just praise. You know, how many times do you have someone ask you a question like that, and then you kind of poop on it, and they're just like, what, you know, whatever. It's like, well, if you wanted me just to tell you it was good, I could have done that, but that's not what I thought you wanted.
Right. And, right. Ask your mom if that's what you want. So, or they get defensive and you're like, but you asked me. But I think that's because what they were looking for wasn't feedback. It was validation or recognition or compliments. And of course, no one goes around asking for that. And so that's part of the stories that we tell ourselves. Right. And that's some of the training that I do. In fact, I have a program that I do in the corporate world on giving and receiving better feedback. because it all starts with the stories that we tell ourselves and to each other. And part of that starts with, don't ask for feedback. Don't give this broad statement about wanting feedback if what you actually want is recognition. There is a way to go in and get recognition. But if you ask for feedback, particularly from a boss, you're probably going to get a critique, which is quite different, because that's a boss's job. And so it took me a really long time and a lot of my own failures to come to some of these conclusions and to realize how we can, you know, approach situations in clearer words. You know, all stories start with words, and words are very powerful things. How do we use the right words to get to the intended result?
Yeah, we had a gentleman come in and do a training at my Toastmasters group a few months back about evaluations, and he has this great presentation on how to evaluate and give people immediate feedback in a way that they can take some improvement out of it, but don't feel shattered. And one of the things we talked about was, you know, you could watch someone speak or you could read their book and you could go, oh, here's 20 things to improve on. But we, you know, we really want to limit it to like, here's one thing I would challenge you to do. And his whole thing was, here's what you did well. Here's one thing I would challenge you to do. And then here's what you did the very best, and always leave them with that. This is what you were best at. And that way people, you know, if you leave with this huge compliment on your shoulder, like, oh my gosh, that was the thing that I'm a rock star at, then you're like, oh, I could take on this challenge. And it's not so heartbreaking in that feedback.
Right. It's meant to be a motivating factor. And I agree with you. And it really depends on knowing the person you're talking to as well. What kind of narrator do they have? Are they, do they tend to be overly critical of themselves? Are they, you know, hard on themselves? Or do they tend to be defensive or adamant that things can't change? And so really understanding the mind of the person that you're speaking to is super important.
Yeah. And knowing, you know, where you are in your relationship with them too, because, you know, your best friend comes to you and says, oh, what am I doing? You're like, dude, you got to get your stuff together. Like, you know, let's stop screwing around. You know, so there's certain people where, you know, you can have that conversation and say, you are going down a wrong path. This isn't going to work. Maybe not in those words, but just, you can be a little bit more forward or blunt, or like, I'm telling you as a friend, we got to, how can I help you, versus, oh yeah, that's great, keep it up.
Exactly. You want to be able to be honest too. So having said that, I would love your maximizing thoughts about my book, not for today, but for another time. I would love to know your thoughts on what more I can do with it. And feel free to throw a little praise in there as well as to what you liked about it. Okay. I'll give you some guidance. Right. On it. I tend to refute it. So I could always use more of it.
Yeah, no, I definitely have so much praise for it, because it was just one of those things that landed. Like I said, it's like you handed it to me, and NLV this year was a very, I don't want to say like, it's a journey. Every year that I go, I told Sarah at one point, like I refer to it as my next level up, because I know that I'm going to go and I'm going to enter at this space, and I'm just going to move higher up on and how I'm doing. but I realized this year while I was sitting there that most of my problems that I'm tripping up are because of what's in my head. And so to have you hand me that book at the end of it, where I'm going, oh my gosh, I've caused all my own problems just with my thoughts. And this guy in my head, that's a bully and a jerk, and I don't like him. And he's so it was perfect.
Let me ask you a question about that guy in your head, because the book is called Fire Your Narrator. And my first tip to separate those thoughts from your own reality is to name the narrator in the book. I call my narrator Squash, because she shows up at just really bad times to totally squash my confidence. Do you have a name for that inner voice, for that narrator?
I do. I call him Block. I didn't before I read the book, but now I call him Block.
Block, because he blocks you.
Yes.
And what is something that Block says to you, or a repetitive thought in your mind that is just so Block, that like Block would say that, you know, that is a thought that you, or a story that needs to be rewritten?
Block will say things like you just aren't made to do this. You're not the right, like you don't have it in you to do this, to push through and get past the challenges. Block will say things like he'll make me compare myself to others. Like, oh, this person had 20,000 views on their video and I had 10. So I must not be doing well, or there must not be value in what I'm putting out there because I didn't have this social proof or acceptance. Or my book has only sold so many copies, so it must not be very good. And then I can tell Block, well, not enough people have read it, to not like it. So it's not because it's not good. It's just because not enough people have seen it yet. You know, so
I like the name. I mean, Block sounds like kind of an asshole, to be honest, but I like the name. I like the name Block because it's so blocking you from not only success, but just being at peace with where you are. So Block sounds very much to me like it's a critical narrator, but also a striving narrator. It's that feeling of you're not good enough because look, you should be doing better.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. And that's something that I really relate to as well with my squash. I think we should send Block and Squash out for a play date and they can chat right. for a bit and keep each other company.
Yeah. They can distract themselves. Well, we can have spill our coffee and spill the tea and all that good stuff.
Yeah, and stick our foot in our mouth and still have a great conversation.
Exactly. Yeah, I thought about naming them Punch because when the narrator comes around, it's like a punch to the gut sometimes. But then I didn't want to live in that space. Like, I didn't want to feel like my wind was knocked out. So I was like, I'm not going to call them Punch because I don't want to give them that much power. Block is something I can move past. I can, you know,
yeah.
You have a block, it can become a step. And I can step up on them and move up, or I can work around them, whatever, or building block.
I love that imagery. And that's exactly what I suggest in the book. So once we've identified sort of that thought or that story that's holding us back, how can we reframe or rewrite it? And you're right. A block might be something getting in our way, but it also can serve as a step. So just having that visual alone, I mean, there actually is, you know, science and research behind this that reframing those thoughts starts with separating them from who you are. So when you think about that inner voice, yes, it's a part of you, but when you think of it as a narrator, actually narrating the story, now it's become almost this third person, which allows us to question it or talk back to it, which, by the way, is very awkward if you do that out loud in front of other people. But, you know, there's times when I'm like, I'll be at the gym and I'm just sweating and I can't keep up with the class and I'm not good at it. And, you know, there's Squash right there on my shoulder, whispering in my ear, like, you know, you should just sit on the couch. You're so bad at this. And I can think, thankfully, I don't usually say it out loud, but at least in my head, like, hey, Squash, you're not helping right now. Like we're here.
Right.
I'm just going to do this. I'm going to do the best I can. I am here. I'm doing this. And that kind of tends to quiet her down a little bit, but it is amazing how they just seem to jump right in there. Like they're part of us. And so thinking about it like a narrator, and you can recast that narrator, is my suggestion to anyone who struggles with that inner voice. And also understanding it's not always, I think we think of that inner voice as an inner critic. And that is the most common type of narrator from all my work with different clients. That's what I hear the most, but it can also be a voice, that, you know, that tells you everyone else is wrong. And why are these people getting in my way? You know, more of sort of an arrogant narrator, which is one type. And so that's where I came up with the 10 different types of narrators, but the tips on how to manage them are the same, really regardless of type. And it starts with just first identifying what is the thought and how is it helping me?
Yeah.
And if it's not, then it's time to reframe it, to rewrite it.
Well, one of the most helpful tips in the book was when you mentioned that we make the mistake of thinking that our narrator is our own voice, that that's us, and separating that from us was just huge. Because I go, oh, like if that's my voice, then I believe it. And I feel like there's no changing it. If it's something separate, if it's a third party, now I can argue with it. Now I can say, wait, you're not right. That's not who I'm choosing to be. And I can have a moment where I'm arguing with you or where you're in my head, but that doesn't dictate that that's my whole story.
Absolutely. And then I think, you know, we're all looking to get at our inner voice, that really strong inner voice from our gut, that one that does guide us, that does show us the way. And which was funny, we started the conversation talking about clutter. It's all those stories over the years, the failures and the mistakes and the foot in the mouth and the spilled coffee that leads to this other voice that kind of gets in the way. And so if we can clear out the clutter of all of those unhelpful stories, I feel like that voice that really is you, that does believe in you, that does support you, can come out. But you gotta identify the blocks and the squashes first and sort of set them to the side. And I feel like you did that with the development of your business and just the idea of owning your awkward. I mean, what was that process like of saying, I'm no longer gonna shy away from this. I'm going to hold on to the things that make me uniquely me and show everyone else how that can be their superpower as well.
Yeah, that, you know, I'm so glad you asked that because that was such a developmental process. Like I decided 6 years ago, I was going to be a speaker, and I hadn't really developed it as Own Your Awkward yet. And I sucked. I was a good speaker. I was good at speaking. I wasn't like, oh my gosh, I'm awful on stage. But what I sucked at was having a message to go out and say, I'm going to come talk to your audience about this thing. And for myself, I emailed like every school in the state. I'm like, hey, I'm a speaker now. Let me know what you want me to come speak to you about. And I messaged businesses and people that I know. I'm like, hey, I'm a motivational speaker. I'll come talk to you about whatever. And
Right.
boy, was that awful. You know, I didn't realize how bad that was as far as not really having a clear message, because I thought, well, I can talk about leadership, I can talk about adversity, I can talk about change. But now it's like, I can come to you and I can talk to you about how taking your insecurity and making it your superpower is what you need to do in order to live a happy, successful life. But I didn't understand that at the time until I started telling my stories on stage, started having an audience, and then realizing that that was the central theme, that my story of being okay with myself, making the changes I needed to in my life, to take that thing that I never felt comfortable with and say, you know what? This is who I am. And the reason that I have held myself back this whole time was because I wasn't okay with who I was. And as soon as I became okay with that, I'm doing everything that I've ever wanted to do. That's the story. That's the thing I need to be sharing. And I always, my narrator is in their blocks going, that's not good enough. Who cares about that?
Locke is wrong.
Right. But I always thought that my story didn't matter and that it wasn't a big enough story. And I learned that your story isn't what's important. It's that you're sharing it and that people are finding perspective and that they can somehow connect, because there's someone else out there who thinks their story isn't big enough. And when they hear it and they can relate to you, then go, oh, I don't have to have lived a stereotypically horrific life in order to know that I've had some struggles and challenges, because those challenges that I've had, maybe I wasn't homeless, maybe I didn't lose a limb, maybe I wasn't in prison or, you know, addicted to drugs and on the street or whatever. However, the struggles I had were still the biggest struggles I've ever experienced and the biggest thing I've had to overcome. And someone else has had that same situation.
What you've just said, and by the way, you should maximize it as you publicize this podcast, was exactly why stories are so powerful. And you mentioned that, you know, the meaning of the story to the audience is really what matters the most. So all the other stories you mentioned, those, you know, losing a limb and surviving cancer, those are all, you know, amazing stories to the that are set meant to inspire us because it's triumph over adversity. But so too is owning your awkwardness and figuring out how to use it as your message. That's a triumph over adversity as well. And what I loved about how you explained that journey to the stage. And by the way, I started my company around 6 years ago also. So there's this, you know, we're sort of on a similar
Right.
course here. And refining the message as I go, as I learn more about what can I offer that impacts audiences the most? So clearly, you could talk about leadership, you could talk about relationship building and communication. But once you found your specific part of it, this idea of owning your awkward, now it's so much more meaningful. And also bringing out what people need to hear about. All these awkward stories, by the way, they're funny and they're relatable. We share them generously. But for the most part, people aren't taught to do that, they're
Right.
taught to hide it. But that's not only what makes us unique, and memorable, it's what helps audiences connect with us. So
Exactly.
everything you just said there was so perfect to me about the power of a story and how you've really figured out what matters most. And it's showing that awkward, owning your awkward so that the audience can learn to own their own. And I can't think of anything more powerful than that.
Oh, well, thank you. It's been a journey, and like you said, once you know what part of your story you're bringing out and what you're talking about, then you can take it and say, well, I can talk to you about how owning your awkward or firing your narrator will make you a great leader, or how that will get you through change or adversity, whatever that thing is. You can then take your thing and apply it to the different audiences you're encountering. But I was doing it backwards. I'm like, oh, who do you want me to talk to? And so it feels good to now actually have it. And it makes it so much easier, because now this is my thing. People find me, or when I go out to people, they say, what do you talk on? And it's, well, this is the thing. Let's figure out if it works for you or not. And I've kind of gotten to the place where Sure, we all want to grow our business and stuff, but after some things we learned at NLV, where I'm just like, well, I'm just gonna create the space where people are looking for what I have to offer, make sure that I'm the obvious choice.
Yeah, and what I love about it too is that it's really an invitation to the audience to share their own stories, and that's where powerful relationships develop. So I said mentioned I can sort of see and feel stories. I can be in front of an audience and sharing stories, but what I love doing more than a keynote is a workshop type facilitation where they start sharing their own stories or thinking about them, writing them down, or breaking into small groups, because you can feel it in the air, this energy as they start sharing stories. It's almost like this, like the story little molecules go from
right.
one person to the next, and I can just sense it. And that's something that shift is very rewarding for me when I know we've unleashed the stories now.
Right.
And then everyone in that room who hears that message, as a result of that, their story moving forward, it'll be changed as a result of being in that room, of hearing from you or talking to other people. And then we create a future story together that's different than it would have been had they not been in that room together. Just like meeting you at NLV, like it sets forward a trajectory that changes each of our stories from here on out, whether, you're reading the book on the plane and,
right.
and your podcast and, and that's what I love about just the idea of being authentic and reaching out to people exactly as you are. And then the stories grow as a result of that.
I love that image of the story molecules. Like you're unleashing the stories, and they're there and they're everywhere, but it's not just bringing the value out in their stories that everyone has, but like you said, they're changing, and now all of a sudden we're in this new story together. And even the value of us meeting at NLV, we had some interaction there, but not nearly as much as we've had after. The real connection comes when we're like, oh, let's dig in a little bit deeper into this story. So
yeah, absolutely.
Well, we are getting close to running out of time here. So before we go, Val, I'm curious, how would you challenge people that are listening and watching to own their awkward as they move forward or to bring their story out?
So, I mean, I love that you help people define sort of like owning their awkward, that thing that's holding them back. And where I feel, we meet in the middle is that to me, owning that awkward is oftentimes just a story we're telling ourselves. So I would challenge your listeners to think about what's that story you tell yourself, that thought or story. And Andy, you were kind enough to share yours, the things that Block says to you. What are those stories you tell yourself that are getting in your way, that at this point it's just story clutter? And to challenge yourself about why you think about it that way. So for example, Squash always says to me, if I fail at something, Squash says, well, you're not working hard enough. I have this very strong work ethic. And so you're not working hard enough is like my go-to. But sometimes, and I know I'm a hard worker, sometimes that's no longer true. So I can break down the thought as to, well, where's the evidence that I'm not working hard enough? I mean, is it really true? Or is it just a story that I've told myself? So I would challenge listeners to question the stories they tell themselves. And if it's not helpful, if it's just story clutter at this point, let's go back to our original theme here. Let's do some spring cleaning. Clean out that story. How might you reframe or rewrite it? And if you haven't yet named your inner narrator, like Andy has Block and I have my Squash, I do think it helps to name that narrator along with the thought, because then you can challenge it. And if all else fails and you're struggling with this, get outside, take a walk. That'll get some of the juices flowing and see what you come up with. But know that stories aren't necessarily permanent. They can be rewritten and you can grow upon them. And the future story doesn't have to be exactly the way it was in the past. So think about the present actions you need to take to be able to move your story forward. That's how I'd like to challenge them.
That is beautiful. I love what you just said about being able to, that stories can be rewritten. And I started, the light bulb started going off when you said that, and which I'll share with you later. But
maximize that idea.
Exactly. I started thinking, oh my gosh, that's so true. Because we think that a story is written and then we just take it as truth, and that's the big mistake, and that's where it becomes more powerful than it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can always turn the page and write a new chapter. I mean, you really always have that opportunity. So that's what I'm big on.
I love that, and I believe it. And so everybody who's listening and watching, click the links in the description here so you can grab a copy of Fire Your Narrator so you can check out Val, you can follow her online, you can check out her website and support her in every way possible. And Val, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Andy.
And everybody else, be sure you go out there this week, fire your narrator, and own your awkward.
Thank you so much for listening in for today's show. Be sure to visit awkwardcareer.com to continue your journey. And of course, please like, subscribe, and share with your friends so they can find their awkward side and learn how to own it.